We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
Hey, everybody, it's Kyle Rizdahl. Thanks for listening to the Corner Office Podcast. We've got another episode for you today, and this time we're talking about the finance website with more than 100 million users a year. NerdWallet is the site and the company. It's a place to get financial advice on credit cards and loans, taxes, anything money-related, really. A lot of its users are millennials, but the rest of us use it, too. Tim Chen is the co-founder and CEO of NerdWallet. Tim, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So I have to tell you, we were in a meeting this morning, and we were talking about some of the stuff that's coming up. And I said, well, I'm talking to Tim Chen of NerdWallet here in a couple hours, and like three or four of the millennials in the room went, oh, wow, NerdWallet. Yeah, I know that company, which I thought was interesting that that was the gut reaction of that segment of the audience.
Yeah, it's remarkable. We reach 100 million people a year, but predominantly are known by millennials.
On purpose, too, right?
Yeah, so millennials face a lot of financial decisions. If you think about it, you know, when you get married or when you graduate from college, you're faced with this huge cluster of decisions, checking accounts, auto loans, credit cards, bank accounts, joint checking accounts. And, you know, it really clusters around the millennial age.
Do me a favor, would you, and tell me why this economy needs this company right now?
Yeah, money is complicated. You know,
yes, it is, man.
It is. And, you know, the thing that we try to do is we try to make it easier. And there's two huge complicated issues with money. The first is it's extremely hard to comparison shop because everyone's different. And even the pricing of these products depends on things like your credit score. So it's very hard for someone to get a really objective, transparent view into all the options out there. And the second really hard thing is that it's hard to stay on top of all your stuff. I mean, by the time you have your first kid, you probably have 10, 12 different financial accounts. Hmm. And how do you know that they're the best ones? How do you stay current? So it's hard to stay organized and keep your budgets and all that stuff. So we try to help with those things.
Give me the origin story, would you, about how this company came to be?
Sure. You know, NerdWallet started as a spreadsheet. So my sister asked me for help finding a credit card, and I thought, I wonder what the answer to that is. And so my first thought was, let me Google that for you. And, you know, so I was kind of surprised by what I found. I mean, it was a lot of marketing material, not much financial analysis the way I would think to do it. You know, I'd been working in finance at the time. So I expected something like a spreadsheet. And so I quickly pulled together all the credit card offers from the biggest banks and sent it around. It got forwarded to a few friends. They forwarded it to a few more friends. And that's kind of how it started. Over time, we branched out into more products than just credit cards. So things like personal loans, savings accounts, CDs, auto insurance, all sorts of stuff. But pretty much the same problem. It's just hard to figure out apples and oranges.
Which, and this is deeply, deeply cynical, but one has to imagine that the apples and oranges and hard to figure out thing is somewhat a feature of the system if you're a financial professional, not a bug.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, banks, their core business is building a relationship with you, often through something like a checking account, and then selling you more of their own products over time. And, you know, the products they have might not be as good as products you can find on the internet. So I think there's this big transition and happening from offline to online, where millennials are just used to comparing things. Even college professors, that's the one that really strikes me as an older millennial. Yeah, people don't really take college courses anymore without reading the ratings on their professors and figuring out which ones are good and which ones to avoid. Kind of mind-blowing.
That's kind of great, actually. That's a really good analogy. When did you know that this business was going to make it? I mean, you're regularly profitable. You've got 300 or more employees. I mean, you're a going concern. When did the fear of failure leave you, if ever, I suppose?
Yeah, I mean, I live with the fear of failure every day, and it never quite feels like we're there or we're quite where we want to be. But yeah, I would say by the end of the second year, it started to become apparent that there was quite an audience for this type of analysis, and we started to, you know, earn a pretty healthy profit in excess of what I would probably be earning at a job. And I think that's when it became apparent that this was something I could really focus on.
Should be said here, but there's a little bit of a dilemma for you in the profit-making thing, right? Because you make profits from commissions off credit card companies and financial services companies whose advice you're evaluating and recommending to your users, yeah?
Yeah, that's right. This is kind of why the industry as a whole really took a while to take hold. I think a consumer can really feel when it doesn't quite taste right. And so, yeah, we're matchmakers. We get paid when, the financial institution gets the right type of customer and the customer feels comfortable with the financial institution. So there can be a conflict of interest between the business and the consumer sometimes. And so what we do is we have like a Chinese wall between our editorial staff and our business side of the house. And editorial opinions from our subject matter experts, our journalists, are completely independent.
It's interesting you use the word journalist, because I would not have characterized that as a NerdWallet function.
Right. You know, so we hired a journalism team from, traditional media. And one of the things that really struck me was the person who was building this team said, hey, don't think of these people as journalists. They're really subject matter experts. They spend 80% of their time trying to understand all the terms and conditions and the laws and all this stuff. And, you know, they spend 20% of their time expressing those views using pen and paper. Hmm. So that's how we think about them internally. So we have a couple of different classes of subject matters and experts internally, from journalists to product managers to engineers. And they go through a very similar process involving things like user research and iterative development.
Well, so talk to me actually about user research and to continue the journalism analogy. The reporting that you do, how do you gather your data and how do you know what you know, I guess is the question.
Right. Well, there's different flavors of user research. So, for example, if we're trying to figure out how to help someone choose between a traditional versus Roth IRA, we may have three different stabs at that. It may be an article, a calculator, and we'll put these early drafts in front of real people and say, does this make sense? Are you confused? Do you get it? And then we'll keep on iterating in that fashion until we have something that we think really helps and resonates with people. So that's kind of how we think about user research. So both our journalists do that as well as our product managers.
So what do you learn? I mean, you actually have done field trips into users' customers' homes, I guess. I mean, what do you learn? What are the top like three questions people ask?
You know, one observation I have is that there's a real distinction between people who are trying to survive, trying to make it, versus people who are thinking from the position of excess. One example is, when we were first building our personal loan product, we thought, gosh, we should really rate this by interest rate because, academically speaking, don't people just want the lowest interest rates? And we were immediately hit with, the reality of cash flow for people who are really struggling paycheck to paycheck, which is about half the population. Mm-hmm. And so they cared a lot more about things like monthly payment than interest rate. And so, starting to understand things like that, you start designing products differently. You may ultimately want to impart the importance of interest rate, but you have to meet people where they are and then try to bring those things in later.
Yeah, so it's a question of lowest common denominator, right? You have to start with what people know.
That's right, yeah.
You served for a while on the Consumer Advisory Board at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, right?
I did, yes.
And you no longer are.
That's right.
Yeah, well, explain the chuckle there.
Well, yeah. So I guess the idea is that, under the previous administration, we had a Consumer Advisory Board put together to help advise the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, on how to set and enforce their policies. And, this was quite a diverse group of people ranging from different industries, everything from, payday lenders to banks to regional banks to, payment networks to nonprofits to housing advocates. I was honored to serve on that board. When the new director of the CFPB came in, they let us know that they had different needs and they would need a smaller group of people. So we were largely disbanded as a group. And yeah, I think they're going to be appointing some new people at some point.
I ask because there's a question that comes out of that, which is whose job is it to protect American consumers from the vagaries of the financial system? Is it the government or is it the private sector?
That is a great question. And I see this two ways. So the way the government can help is they can think about things like abuse, disclosures, regulations. And I think that's always going to play an important role because there's no such thing as an unregulated financial sector. There's rules. They're either going to be rules that are extremely business friendly or rules that are extremely conservative and oriented towards consumer protection. But I think where we step in and where a lot of other companies should be stepping in is helping consumers vote with their feet. Because ultimately, if there's transparency in terms of where consumers could really be hurt by certain products or policies, you know, consumers voting with their feet is by far the best and most sustainable reinforcement of that.
This is an uncharitable thing to say, but to some degree, a freewheeling financial system is a business opportunity for you.
Yeah, you know, so kind of behind closed doors, I've actually talked to some of the CEOs of the bigger banks, and I think you might be a little bit surprised at what they say. I think there's largely agreement that regulations that balance between consumers and financial institutions are actually a good thing for business in the long run. One, because the administrations are going to change over the decades. And if the pendulum swings back and forth, it's really bad for business because you end up having to recalibrate. And the second thing to think about is if there's not good and fair enforcement, it's very easy for a small upstart financial companies with the loosest moral compass to take a bite out of the big established companies. There's a big advantage to incumbency in the sense of no matter what the regulatory environment, you can adjust and adapt and use your scale to your advantage. But if you're fighting with upstarts who are willing to really sink really low, that becomes challenging.
I want to do a very quick circle around to you and where you came from before you started this company. And I do it in light of the fact that we're coming off the 10th anniversary of Lehman Brothers. You're a hedge fund guy, right, who lost his job in the financial crisis.
That's right. Yeah. I spent my prior career as an investor analyzing which technology companies were going to succeed and which ones were going to fail. And, you know, betting our investors' money based on those hypotheses.
And how much do you think of your business success now is because people are scarred, I suppose, by that crisis that cost you your job?
Yeah, you know what? I do think that crisis had a big impact on the public's faith in some of the largest banking institutions out there. And I think it was concurrent with some other factors, such as, you know, this millennial shift towards offline to online and wanting reviews on everything. So I think those two factors really caused people to do things like comparison shop more actively and think a little bit more cynically about, you know, just trusting everything that a broker or an advisor or a banker was telling them.
Tim Chen, co-founder and CEO of NerdWallet. Tim, thanks a lot. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Kai.
That was it. My conversation with Tim Chen, the CEO and co-founder of NerdWallet. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Corner Office Podcast. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Leave us a review, if you would. The Corner Office Podcast is produced by Daisy Palacios and Bennett Purser. Marketplace is produced by Nancy Fargali. Sitar Nieves is the Executive Director of On Demand. Deborah Clark is the Senior Vice President and General Manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. We'll see you again in a couple of weeks.